afternoon session, the final session of this United Conference. We have two speakers today, and the first is local, UT Austin. Charles Redden will speak to us on faces in dense networks.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Francois. Wonderful conference, and for inviting me to speak. Are you getting the microphone at all? Okay. So, informally, I'm interested in determining the structure for large graphs with constraints. So, large simple graphs, and constraints meaning I'll put two or three constraints of fixed density of some subgraphs like edges, triangles, whatever. When I say I'm interested in the structure, what I mean is emergent structure. And the picture behind that is the following. So I, when I think of material like iron made out of a lot of atoms, when you look at a macroscopic chunk of iron or group of iron atoms under normal conditions, meaning constraints of, say, temperature and pressure, you don't normally think in terms of the atoms themselves. The structure, at least for material in equilibrium, is in a well-defined phase, a gas, liquid, solid phase, and really, for bulk purposes, you know everything about the material, just given, say, temperature and pressure. Or if there's magnetic fields around, you'll need another parameter. But, you know, if you want to understand the properties of such a material, you can look them up in tables, because you're just under these few parameters. You understand what the state of the system is. You don't have to know, need to know exactly how big it is or anything. I want to see whether there are such phenomena for large graphs under constraints. So I think about a large graph. I'll be thinking about dense graphs. So by dense, I mean the number of edges is a fraction of what you could have in a complete graph. Okay. So I want to know, is it true that if a graph is very large, that it settles into a phase where if you just know the parameters, say, again, let me back up, not just a large graph with constraints. Say I constrain the density of edges, density of triangles, say, something like that. Is it true that essentially all graphs that are very large but with those constraints are essentially determined, sort of almost essentially uniquely determined just by those two parameters, just as the way material made out of a lot of atoms is determined by temperature and pressure, say, something like that. That's what I'm interested in, and I will tell you some recent results about that. Okay, so let's think about graphs on labeled vertices with n vertices. And given a simple graph, say a triangle, I'll be interested in the density of that in my large graph G, by which I mean technically this, the fraction of all possible maps from the vertices of H into the vertices of G, which preserves edges. Okay. Now for triangles and edges and whatever, that's actually... If H is a triangle or an edge, that's really just counting subgraphs. It's slightly different if they're not complete graphs, but that's okay. I say I'm going to make two or three constraints, and for the beginning part of the talk, I want to specialize to the specific case of edge density and triangle density. So I'm going to think about large graphs with a fixed edge density and triangle density. It's a little tricky fixing it exactly, so what I'm actually going to do is fix the edge density in a small interval around an epsilon, fix the triangle density in a small interval around tau, okay? But basically, edge density is fixed as epsilon, triangle density is fixed as tau, roughly. Now, these are densities, so they each are in the interval 0, 1, but in fact, not all such values are attainable. The actual details were figured out by Rasparov relatively recently, and it looks like this. The values for the edge density and triangle density have to lie inside this sort of misshapen triangle. Simple curve, tau is epsilon and 3/2, upper curve, lower curve is actually very complicated with an infinite number of little scallops in it. The graph for this particular point is unique. This is just a complete bipartite, balanced bipartite. So you split the vertices into two equal chunks and have edges only between those subsets. Nothing within each subset, right? Just bipartite, complete bipartite. And for here, these other corner points is similar. This is balanced, complete tripartite, fourpartite, etc. That's what they are. So again, if you fix an edge density around here and minimize the possible triangle density you can have, well, for edge density less than 1/2, you can have zero triangles. But for edge density above 1/2, you can't actually have zero triangles. If you've got tons of if you have tons of edges in your graph, you simply have to have some triangles. And this tells you what they are, and not only what the density is, but it's known for everywhere on the boundary what are the graphs that actually achieve that extremum densities. Okay, so the points on the boundary here are the extremum problems. This is extremal graph theory. This has been a subject in graph theory for quite a while, studying what are the graphs that give you the extreme possibilities for different subgraphs. What I'm interested in myself is to extend all that theory to the interior. Now, in the interior, you're not going to get a single graph that optimizes, you fix an edge density here and a triangle density here. There isn't just one graph that does that, but I'm looking for something like phases in statistical physics, and in fact what we'll see is that there is essentially a unique state with a couple of parameters giving you probabilities, and I'll explain that in a couple of minutes. Okay. So I'm interested in going into the interior and again studying not what one graph is that achieves a maximum, but what most graphs are. That's what you do when you're trying to understand a piece of material. You're not trying to follow exactly where all the atoms are. You're trying to find out a sort of simple prescription with a few parameters which tell you very accurately what almost all the graphs are. That's what I want. Almost all. And I'll tell you what that means in a second. It's not measure theoretic. It's a different notion. And when I have such a state, I'll be able to compute very accurately everything in there. I started working with some subgraphs, but I can then give me any other subgraph and I can tell you how many of them there are in any large graph with those constraints, etc. I'll be able to compute anything you want with the state once I've gotten this, solved this optimization problem. Okay. So for certain points in that phase space, namely on this curve in the phase space, we know very well what a typical graph is. Almost all the graphs in there are understood as simply independent edges. You treat the edges as independent, and you will get this relation between tau and epsilon, and from that you can compute anything you want in that state. That's a very easy thing to compute then, right? What I'm going to be looking for is, what about the rest of the phase space? Okay. Now, the quantity I'm going to use to compute is z. There it is. I defined it here. I didn't say. The main tool I'm going to be using is this z with a whole bunch of parameters on it is the number of graphs with these given densities. It's got the a on it and the n on it, but the main things are the edge and triangle densities, okay? That's the main tool, just the number of them without that density. Now that quantity grows exponentially in n, actually like n squared. So to understand what it's like for a very large n, for a very large graphs, I take its log and divide by n squared, right? And that's my rate of growth of the number of graphs, okay? And I take the limit where my little intervals, the constraint intervals go to zero, and the number of vertices goes to infinity, and I get this entropy. That's the entropy. What it's telling me is what exponentially most graphs are like if n is very large and you have those constraints. Almost all the graphs are going to be such as to maximize this. Okay? So that's the sense in which I'm trying to understand what a typical large graph looks like. Almost all, but in this sense. Very little is known about this S. We've proven that the limit does exist, but nothing about it really known in general. We believe it's actually piecewise smooth as a function of these parameters. Can't prove that. I'll tell you what results we have as we go along. But I expect the S to be piecewise smooth, and we'll define what a phase is as a maximally connected set of parameters, the epsilon tau, in which S is analytic. So I'm expecting S to be generally analytic, except as you go across certain lower dimensional surfaces in the epsilon tau parameters. Okay, at which you lose analyticity, and which the phases are changing from one phase to another. We'll call it a phase transition. Okay. So I'll be giving you some evidence for understanding large graphs in terms of phases like this. And the evidence comes in two sorts. There is simulation evidence. I'll give you some simulation evidence in which and I'll also give you some theorems, okay? And it's not completely convincing yet, but it's a young subject, and I'll just tell you what the status is. Special case of where the constraints are edge density and triangle density, I said I would specialize that way for a while. By simulation, we find that the phase space is broken up into many phases. There's this upper phase up here, which in many ways is like a liquid phase in materials. I'm not going to talk about that much. But the ones down below this curve, the Erdős-Rényi curve, where the edges are independent, below that, this space in here is, to first order, broken up by the dominance of these vertices. This vertex here produces a full phase out here, phase 2. This vertex over here produces a small phase 3. This one produces a small phase 4. Every one of these infinitely many things produces a multipartite-like phase. Okay. To describe, so in here, for instance, the phase is basically bipartite in a sense. Let me try to get a little more detail. Let's see. No, okay. I'm going to be describing those phases in terms of probability. Let me just back up slightly. I'm actually quite interested in the way probability ends up being part of this kind of modeling of large systems, both in statistical physics also, where the tradition is very long, and in networks. Well, obviously people have worked with probabilistic treatments of graphs for a long time, but there hasn't been a long time where people have looked at asymptotics. The asymptotic behavior for infinitely large, as the graphs get very large and you do careful analysis of constrained graphs. That's actually rather new. And I want to tell you how probability comes into such modeling. So what you do is, you start with some assumption that a finite number of, a small number of graphs, like edges, triangles, whatever, a small number of these things are significant. That is, you believe, you have some network you're trying to understand. You say, well, I think what's actually going on in there is, if I really knew how many triangles or whatever, I'd have a good sense of what's going on in that graph. So you pick a few subgraphs as being significant, say edges and triangles. Then you try to determine what most graphs are like that have those constraints on those densities. Technically, what you do, you go to large deviation theory, which will tell you, which will actually give you a probabilistic description for the graph, what a typical graph is that maximizes that entropy. Okay? That is, there's a variational principle which will tell you what most graphs are with those constraints. This is all based on, again, rather recent work. There's a paper, important paper of Chatterjee and Varadhan appeared recently. That's the large deviation theory for dense graphs. And the mathematics that he uses is a formulation of graphons, which has been developed by quite a few people over the last decade or so. There's a recent book which is good for, it's sort of encyclopedic. And I'll be using that language a little bit as we go along. So the variational principle is the following. I proved this with Lorenzo Sadoun, but in fact it's heavily based on work of Chatterjee and Diaconis, who also had a similar sort of modeling, which I'll talk about at the end. So the variational principle just says the following. Given a pair of parameters, and here I'm simplifying to this case where my constraints are just edges and triangles, the entropy that I'm trying to maximize, entropy is just my count. It's telling me, what is, how many graphs are there? What's the rate of growth of that, of the entropy? Well, that quantity is the maximum over, I can understand it as the maximum over a set of g's, graphons g's, of some function I of g. The function I of g is here, and it's based on Shannon entropy. Okay, so it's, S is literally the maximum of this sort of entropy-like function of g, where the maximum is over all g's with the constraints. The constraints are written this way in terms of your g. I didn't tell you what the g is. Well, here's what the g is. The g is simply a function from 0, 1 cross 0, 1 into 0 cross 1, which is symmetric. And what it means, the way you should think about it, is the following. So a graphon g is a function such that, well, you think of the points down here as infinitely many vertices. So a point in here is this vertex and this vertex, and the point in here is roughly an adjacency. It's roughly an adjacency matrix. It gives you the number of, or the probability of having an edge between this vertex and that vertex. Okay, that's what it is. So what we're saying is that the entropy is just the maximum of this entropy-like quantity over probability distributions, roughly, or adjacency matrices, but with probabilities in them, not just zeros, ones, but probabilities in them, okay? Subject to these constraints that I want to solve. So this is a variational principle. If I want to understand what most things are like, I look for the G that maximizes this. When I understand that G, I will know what most graphs are. I'll have a probabilistic description of what exponentially most graphs are that satisfy those constraints. That's what I will have. Okay? And, So here I'm going to show you now results for edge triangle model, which are still simulation results. They're not proven. And I'll look again at the portion of the phase diagram here. Okay? So first I'll tell you, I already told you, what the graphon over here is bipartite, which means this graphon should be the following. You break up your set of vertices into two clumps, these vertices. There's nothing between this and this. These are zero probability and these are one. That's a complete bipartite. Okay? Because the vertices in here are only connected to the vertices in here, add everyone to everyone. Okay? Well, that's the graphon that maximized the entropy right here. Over here, what happens is this just gets lower. The probability gets smaller, but you still stay at zero. And I'll just show you what it is everywhere throughout here. It's given by, as far as simulation goes, this formula gives it to you. It tells you what the maximum graphon is for a given epsilon and tau. Okay, just bipartite, it's just a generalization of what's going on in the boundary, which is, in fact, well known. Okay, that's been studied. What's going on in the boundary, what optimizes the entropy on the boundary, has been solved quite a while ago. We're trying to work out what's going on in the interior. Okay. The main result is the following. So we simulated the edge triangle model, which meant that by simulation we tried to find out what the G was which maximized the entropy, and what we found was that it was always a very simple looking object, just roughly like this. And what that means is that the optimum is obtained by taking the set of all vertices and just breaking it up into a certain number of chunks and having a simple rule by which you tell what are the probabilities between a vertex in one chunk and another. That's all it is, just a few parameters. Throughout the phase space, I don't think we've ever needed more than 4 or 5 parameters to describe everything that's going on. Okay? There are phase transitions, which I indicated on that diagram, where it changes drastically as I go across a certain curve, but basically that's what's happening. And we find this rather surprising that, in fact, the probability distribution has an extremely simple form. Roughly speaking, I understand this as being what emergence is in graphs. That is, when the graph gets very large, what you have is a set of vertices just breaks apart into a small number of subsets, and you have a simple rule between how things are connected. That is emergent. It's no longer a description in terms of what's going on between this particular vertex and the other. I have a large-scale description of what's happening in my system. Very much, well, this is the analog, I believe, for graphs of what you have in StatMech for atoms with forces between them. Okay? So we found this in simulation in this one particular model. I want to tell you what we found for other models. So next I'll talk a bit about where the constraints are not edges and triangles, but a finite number of what I call K-stars. So a K-star is the following, in case you don't, I don't know how universal the language is. I have one vertex and K edges coming out of it. That's a K-star. So the model we're talking about, star models, star model just means I fix the density of a finite number of these Ks, densities of K-stars for a finite number of Ks, including K equals 1, which is an edge. Okay? An edge and one or two other K-stars. Okay, like fixing the density of edges, 2 stars and 3 stars, say. In fact, we've done simulations for the case of simply the edge and just 2 star. So just 2 parameters like in the previous model, and now the boundary is this, and it was worked out by other people before us, and what we're trying to do is figure out what's happening in the interior. And the variational principle is very much like before, it's just the constraints look a little different. Here they are. What we prove here is that, again, now it's a proof. It is not simulation. This is a proof that the maximizing graphon for these constraints, so I want to know, do I have a large graph under these constraints? A finite number of K-stars are fixed. What does a very large graph with those constraints look like? And this time we prove that it is what we're calling multipodal, that is, the set of vertices breaks up into a finite number of pieces, and there's a probabilistic rule between the edges between them. That is it. And the number of pieces that you break up the vertex set into can be large. In fact, if you look back again at the edge triangle model, remember I said that as you go up here, the number, it's tripartite, fourpartite, whatever, that means it is getting broken up into many pieces. That does not mean you need more parameters. Does not mean. In fact, as I said, we never needed more than like four or five parameters, ever. Okay? So we have a theorem, at least for these star-like models, that the typical graph when the system is very large is that the set of vertices is broken up into a finite number of chunks, and you just have a simple rule between probability of edges between them. And, okay, so that's theorem and so simulation on edge triangle and proof for the star models. Yes?
So what do you mean? So you decompose into sets, subsets?
Yes.
And there is a way, a similar way to need a given set to establish edges. And for two different elements of the partition, this is yet another rule?
It is, that is a rule. So, in principle, what it means is the following, that this is supposed to be all the vertices. It's broken up into a finite number of pieces. They don't have to be equal size. And, of course, you want the same rule here because it's the same vertices you're talking about. And then your graphon is simply something like a block model. It is simply a probability for any vertex in here and any vertex in here. There is a probability for an edge between them. So it's a number, okay? So it's just a block like that, block model like that. But this is proven. This is not just a simple model we're using in order to try to understand something. It has to be like this. That's the difference. For any finite number of case constraints, stars of case constraints. But again, this we found, we didn't prove it for edge triangle, but we found the same thing there too. Okay? Yes? Yes.
How do you prove in simulation? It's uniform, sub-uniform from all graphs with this constraint, or how do you do this?
Kui did this, he's here, and so, first of all, what we do is, I'm not going to do this justice, but I'll tell you what I understand of it is, we first look at all possible graphons of this sort, that is, where I have, you know, relative size, and search in here for optimum. Then look in three by three, search for optimum. Four, we go up to 16, okay? Search all possibilities, okay? And what we found, when I reported simulation evidence, what happened was we would start off with two, three, or whatever, and go up higher and higher and higher, but never needed them, in fact. We always found that, in fact, the optimum was obtained for a very small number. Okay?
So you consider all possible
considerations? Yes, yes. No, we're not looking. Yes. What we're trying to do, this is a graphon. I'm looking for all possible graphons of this kind with a number in here, okay? And trying to maximize that entropy. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to maximize the entropy by a graphon of this kind. Okay? Okay?
As you get defined, so you will go to something which is arbitrary.
In principle, if we could go to infinite size, we'd have a foolproof. But we can't. So we go up to 16, and it's whatever you want to treat that as evidence. Okay?
So you work on these graphons, and you use this convergence.
Yes.
You do not simulate graphs. You work on these
graphons. No, I work on the graphons. Yes. I use the theorem about that the optimum of the graphon that maximizes, I'm looking for the graphon that maximizes that free energy. Okay. Yes? No, there's no bound on the M. It's finite, but we can't bound it. And as I said before, for For a general result, of course, that's a theorem for star models. But for the edge triangle model, remember, we already know that on the boundary, the M gets arbitrarily large. So we're not expecting to have a general theorem which limits that size of that M. But it's also true that even if M is very large, that does not mean that you need many parameters. Roughly speaking, in the pure phases, what's going on is the vertices in the different chunks are actually roughly identical. And they each work this in lockstep with all the others. So they use the same rule that all the others do. So I don't need many parameters. But technically, I don't have a bound on M, on the number of pieces in the partition, and I don't expect to. It's not a natural thing. Okay, for the remainder of the talk, I want to say a few things for people who have seen this kind of modeling before in a different guise. I don't know a lot of... to be fair, I don't know other people who are modeling large graphs in this way with fixed constraints of this kind, fixing the densities. There is a lot of modeling by what's called exponential random graphs modeling, in which you have a... Similar to this, you pick out a few densities of subgraphs, but you model by taking a probability distribution with conjugate parameters to those densities. And then you fit those parameters to your data or whatever. There are a lot of papers on ergums, which are exponential random graph models. In a way, it seems very similar. In both cases, you pick out a few densities you think are important in your graph, and then you try to model it with a probability distribution, etc. It turns out there's quite a difference between the two. These both are, I would say, invented as copies of what you do in statistical mechanics. What I'm doing here was a copy of what's called a microcanonical ensemble, where you fix the density of the mass density and the energy density, and maximize the entropy. The ergum models are copied after the grand canonical ensemble, where you have conjugate parameters for those densities, all the densities. To see the connection between them, I want to point out some connections between them. So first of all, in the optimization problem that I was talking that I've been using here, where I try to optimize the entropy given constraints, well, it's a constrained optimization problem. So one way you can solve such things is Lagrange multiplier technique. You put in some new parameters, call them betas, one for each of the constraints, and you try to vary your entropy plus these other terms in it, okay? You look for critical points of this quantity, okay? I get so-called Euler-Lagrange equations by requiring that this variation in the graphon be zero, but I still have my other constraints, right? That's one way to solve constrained optimization problems, is just add in these other parameters. And quite frankly, we use this. We use this a lot, this Lagrange technique. What people are doing in the exponential random graph business is instead they look at this quantity and simply maximize it. They're not just looking at all the critical points. They simply maximize this over graphons G, and then they will get they get something which depends on their betas. And when you're done, then if you really want to solve this problem of maximizing entropy for given given constraints, you vary your beta so that your maximizing G has the values of the constraints that you want, and you will have solved the original problem. That is a way of using Lagrange multipliers to solve your original problem. The trouble here, which does not arise in statistical physics, generally speaking, it doesn't work. It doesn't work because my entropy is not convex. And so... Technically, what's happening is, as I said before, if I try to maximize this quantity and I get some graph on that does it, well, again, it will be a maximizer for the entropy for certain constraints, namely the densities of that optimizer. Okay, so it will be a maximum of the entropy for those constraints. The trouble is, you will not be able in general to find betas, any beta at all, which will give you some densities that you want to obtain. So I have given densities, I want to understand what a large graph is with those densities. Question arises, are there any betas such that the optimum of this quantity is attained with a graph on with those densities? And in fact, often, no. In fact, usually, no. There are always some constraints where you cannot arrive at in this way. This is called, in physics literature, this the kind of modeling we're doing here is would be called mean field, because I'm working with abstract graphs and vertices can be connected to any of the vertices. It's not like graphs in the plane, say, where you look at just nearest neighbors on a lattice or something like that, where a vertex is only possibly linked to a very small number of other vertices, so-called sparse graphs. So in that sense, a vertex can be connected to anything, and so one might think of it as being, well, in space, it's infinitely long range. If these points really did represent points in a metric space, the points could be arbitrarily far apart, and the rule for connection is independent of that. So it's very long range. This is what's one type of mean field theory. And for field theories in statistical physics, they've known for a while that the different ensembles, grand canonical, whatever, are simply not equivalent. You can have more information in some than the other, and in fact, the microcanonical has all the information, the others simply lose some. And that's what's going on here. So the Ergo models, using subgraphs to model a large network, whatever, through these exponential distributions can only really determine some fraction of the possible constraint problems. When it does work, I mean, when it does give you an optimum, it will agree with what the microcanonical does. It's just that it can't get to a lot of it, especially in the star models. In the star models, it misses essentially everything. What else? I'm finishing early, so you should ask a lot of questions. This is joint work, as I said, as it showed at the beginning. There's joint work with Rick Kenyon from Brown, Qui Ren and Lorenzo Sadoun are here in Texas, and this is all contained in a couple of papers which you can get off the archive. One just appeared in print, and one just went on the archive beginning of the week. That's it. Yes. Yes. Yes, proven. That is, you prove that you look at a finite graph, you do that counting through the Z, as I said, the partition function, and you prove that that quantity, the log of the Z divided by N squared, converges to this quantity, to this S that I'm saying. Right, that's right. Well, there were constraints on this to make it. I mean, it's much easier without the constraints. You put in a finite number of constraints, and you prove that this converges. Yes, And again, I should say, the main tool there is the large deviation theory of Chatterjee and Varadhan. Okay.
Just to connect to our knowledge.
Okay. So this is the phase diagram for the edge triangle model, where again we haven't proven a lot, but we have proven what the graphon is on a line in here, and it is, of course, what I said, it's a bipartite. Okay? But mostly this is simulation evidence. I call this what's below the edge triangle density is what? It's for fixed mass, it's low energy, or low triangle, which I'm thinking of as energy, or for fixed energy, it is high density. So in materials, that would correspond to the solid phase, actually, if you think about it. It's low energy or low temperature, or high density. Okay, it's the solid phase. And in fact, it behaves that way in the sense that you get this structure. On the boundary, this was solved by graph theorists, and what's going on is you get these multipartite graphons, which means that, in fact, vertices break up into a finite number of pieces, and all the ones in a given piece behave the same, and in fact, they all do. They all have the same sort of rule about how they connect to other things. This is the analog of a crystal. For graphs, this is the analog of a crystal. Okay, and there are other reasons for calling it the solid phase. Is in fact, by simulation, we have found these phases with sharp phase transitions between them. So these are like these dotted lines here. This is a phase that everything behaves analytically through here, and then changes drastically across this curve by simulation. These are like solid phase transitions, where you go from one kind of crystal structure to a different kind of crystal structure. Okay, that's what's happening down here. Up here, we have not found any phase transition. We haven't found a gas-liquid transition up here, but there's nothing quite like that up here. These vertices are all down here below the Erdős-Rényi line. What's happening up here, well, again, on the boundary, it was solved a long time ago. What you have, the optimum here, is a clump, a complete graph in a sea of nothing. Right? Just bare vertices, not connected to anything, and then one clump of vertices, all interconnected. And the size of that clump will vary depending on your edge density. Okay, so this is like a droplet, in a sense. That is, stuff is clumped together, but doesn't have structure the way the lower stuff does. There is evidence of a gas-liquid transition. We haven't seen it in the edge triangle model, but in this model, we have found a transition over here in some sense, which I don't want to get into. But a sort of gas-liquid transition. It's a sharp change in the graphon across that curve, and the curve doesn't go all the way down. It ends at a critical point, and it's a classic gas-liquid transition. First order across the curve, and second order at the critical point. So, you know, in many ways, there's a simple-minded analog of the way the graphs are behaving in these phases, and materials made out of a lot of atoms. The nature of the crystals are a little different. It's multipartite rather than crystal, but it's not bad. Not a bad analogy.
So can you go back to that phase diagram for edges and triangles?
So yes.
Looking at that lower graph, it looks... is there some intuition why these scallops are geometrically decreasing?
Well, again, this was worked out by Razborov and others, graph theoretically. You can actually determine. What are you trying to do? You're trying to find out, If you have a given number of edges in a large graph, how would you go about minimizing the number of triangles? How would you actually go about it? And the fact is, it's a special analysis to determine, and they worked this out not that long ago, but they did work. It's an extremum problem in combinatorics. It's not hard to figure out how you would go about trying to minimize. The upper is easier, but...
It's an infinite sequence.
Yes, I personally treat as extremal combinatorics, a well-established area. They've gotten results. I'm looking into a different regime altogether, or just what's happening inside. Here they literally determine exactly what are the graphs that optimize. Exactly what are the graphs. They're not talking probability. What are the graphs? In here, you can't do that in here. So what I'm looking at in here is, what are most graphs like if the system is very large? What are most of them like? It's a different game, actually. This is more analysis, differential equations, the Euler-Lagrange equations, rather than the combinatorics about what's going on the boundary. Very much like, actually, in stat-mech, where, you can model what's going on in material by taking a model of balls, hard balls. It's called a hard sphere model. You just imagine your atoms are just spheres that can't interpenetrate, just that. And you just play with parameters like the number of, the density of balls or whatever, and see how, if you have a very, very large collection of balls, what will it look like if you have the density, vary the density? And what you find is, the optimum problem, the analog of what's going on in the boundary here, was sphere packing. What's the densest possible way to pack spheres? Well, we know what it is. It's a hexagonal close pack, say. Okay, it's a slight complication, but say hexagonal close pack. We know what the density. But what is it if you only have 99% of that? And what physicists have known for many, many years is that the idea of that hexagonal close pack crystal actually lives away from the optimum. And that explains real materials. Real materials are sort of what's happening at the extreme, but pushed away from the extreme. The system actually remembers that. Okay? And we're doing the same thing for large graphs that is just old hat for stat-mech and, say, sphere packing, or that kind of extremum problem. So, as far as phase transitions are concerned, we proved, say, for all quite general models, that this Erdős-Rényi curve, that the entropy is going to be non-analytic there. It's going to have a crease there, a peak there, and going to come away with a corner. So we know there's a transition there. Other than that, there are almost no other proofs of transitions. There's a complicated case for the two-star model, edges and two stars, where we can use some symmetry to prove that the graphons behave in a strange way across a certain line, okay, which agrees with the simulations that there's a phase transition there. But actual proof is of transitions is hard right now.
But proof of lack of transition, to show that...
Analyticity, that's almost as hard. I said at the beginning that we can prove that the entropy exists, literally exists. We don't actually have a proof, rather generally, that it's even continuous. It's almost nothing. You can't... There are no general proofs of that. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So, by simulation, the optimizing graphons behave smoothly throughout here for edge triangle, smoothly, except right on a certain curve. And we can often justify these curves. For this curve, I'm trying to remember, for most of these curves, we don't have a proof that the graphon will change, but we do local analysis. That is, we take second derivatives of the entropy and show that it's unstable there. So we can prove, you know, that it looks like there should be a transition there, but it's not actually a proof. It's just a second derivative argument. It's not an actual optimization proof.